Well, hello again, everyone. My name is Travis.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is the Wheat in the Chaff, where we go through all of the fun recent things that are happening in pop culture, regular culture, Christian culture, any other culture we can find that is worth having a few moments spent with it, and both trying to find something good and also something to maybe take a humorous laugh, a snarky chuckle, as it were. Because there's a little bit of some snark on this podcast.
Yes. And we'll give you a little, you know, behind the scenes, because I had a friend of mine ask me about, he wants to join our podcast soon. And so he was asking me, you know, what are you guys going to be talking about so I can plan ahead? And I was like, dude, we come up with it the day of.
That's right. Usually. Because we kind of sit there and scroll through feeds and
what makes us laugh the most.
Yeah, basically what gives us all a good chuckle most. And what do we think our listeners will have a good laugh at? Because frankly, part of our podcast is it's really less to educate and inform, and it's really more to entertain and hopefully make your day go a little bit faster and more entertaining and a little more amusing. So all that to say, not a lot of planning goes into this right now.
No.
You know, occasionally there'll be something where we go, oh, we need to hit this over the next two or three podcasts. But in general, it's kind of a take it week by week and see what happens in that week to discuss. And yeah. So things coming up on today's podcast is we will be delving into John MacArthur's response / clarification of his earlier Beth Moore go-home statement, which, again, we kind of poked a little fun at, and I'll get into that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But we will hit that again, because John has decided to continue talking.
Which is probably not a good decision.
Probably not a great decision at all. But we'll get into that. What else are we hitting today?
Well, first, we need to talk about what everybody is talking
about. Oh, it's the elephant in the room, frankly.
Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Absolutely. Popeye's chicken sandwich.
I texted you earlier.
Yes.
And I said, hey, because I had to do a funeral today. And I said, hey, can we do it in my house? We usually do it.
Not the funeral, the podcast.
The podcast, yes. The funeral I did at a cemetery. But so Travis said, yeah, we'll come to your house. And I said, hey, I've been craving this Popeye's chicken sandwich because I haven't had one yet. And I've been hearing how amazing they are.
And I was filled with wonder and curiosity, because I have yet to experience this thing, but I have read on the Facebooks, and I have seen it tweeted amongst the Twitterers, the glory that is Popeyes. And of course, anytime you get into a socials kind of debate, it must be divisive, and therefore it escalated into a Popeyes chicken versus Chick-fil-A, which I know very, very well, especially having lived some in the South. Like, Chick-fil-A and I are close. We've had good times together. But this Popeyes I know not of. And so I was curious. I actually got my hopes up, and I was like, let's do this thing. Let's go in on a Popeyes chicken sandwich. In fact, our goal was to actually eat it here on the podcast, and that way we could relate to you, our dear listeners, exactly to what level of glory we had attained. And was it actually, you know, in the same level of speaking as Chick-fil-A?
So what happened was, I go to Popeyes, I go in, there's a few people in there, and I'm waiting in line, and I see this big sign, only one sandwich per order. And I was like, well, I have two.
That's right, because we were going to meet at the house. I was not going to the Popeyes.
Travis was not with me, so I'm like,
I had submitted the order, a mere request for the procurement of a sandwich, and yet denied.
We were denied the Popeyes chicken sandwich. So, Popeyes, if for some reason one of your listeners out there, are a Popeyes employee or management, or listen, somehow connected to Popeyes.
It's all about working the connections. Someone knows somebody who knows somebody who knows Popeye.
Please just increase the minimum order to at least two instead of one, because you have to think about that there could be somebody coming to pick up two sandwiches, one for themselves and one for their good friend who they do podcasts with.
That's right. That's right.
So please, Popeyes.
So I'm going to live in my disappointment a bit today. We'll live with a bit of regret, which is probably appropriate. It offsets the snark and humor for me to have a humbling moment and have to live with some sadness. But yes, our dear listeners, feel free to send us some Popeyes. You can just drop that bad boy right into a box, throw some dry ice with it. We can text the address out at some point. But
sure. Yeah.
One of those two ways. We'll either get there on our own at some point, or someone will mail us a dead, dying Popeye sandwich.
We should probably give them We should probably give them both of our addresses because they could probably only do one per order.
They might only be able to do one. They might have to go 2 days in a row.
We need two listeners to go get us
two listeners for two Popeye sandwiches.
And we'll give you a shout out.
We'll give you a shout out or even make you a guest on the podcast that day. You procure the Popeye sandwich for us and we will have you as a guest speaker. You can be one of our remote call-ins or even live if you're local. But there's the deal. Go ahead and you find a way to make the Popeyes happen. We will find a way to have you on the show, and it will be a good thing.
That's a good idea.
All right. Other good stuff happening this week. I don't know about you. My week is busy. I've got a conference coming up Saturday, and I wanted to spend a couple minutes talking about both the awesome and also kind of slightly ridiculous nature of pastor conferences, church-based conferences. Yeah. Because unlike a lot of conferences that are about one thing or cater to a specific company, or just go ahead and call themselves a trade show, and they're going to have a lot of people giving out bad, crappy pens that don't work. This is a conference for churches, for small churches. I highly endorse it. I'm presenting and teaching at it. I'm attending it. I'm bringing my team. Some of the people who organize it are friends. They're colleagues. And so I'm backing this thing wholly, and so I want to make sure it's, first of all, clear that regardless of the snark that you might hear following, none of that is actually reflected on the intention or the people in the organization themselves.
No, not at all.
No, we have great respect for the conference. Absolutely. At the same time, there is a question that I have, and I'm curious of your thoughts on this, Ryan. When you have a conference, in this case, the conference is centered around the idea of worship, and the idea is that it's a New England conference for New England churches. New York need not apply because we all know you're not part of New England.
No, absolutely.
Somewhere. Yeah, it is like Connecticut and up. And frankly, I'm questionable on Connecticut.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be frank. Connecticut.
Yeah, it's only Connecticut.
We love you, Connecticut. But it's a New England-based conference for New England churches, primarily which are mainly small churches, probably sub 120, as far as attendance goes. So it's not really even catering to... not that we have a lot of them, but, it's not really catering to the kind of like the big mega church or even large church model, right? Like, so if your church has like, 800,000 people and you've got a staff of 50, like, it's not really the conference for you. I mean, you might get something out of it, but in general, it's focused on the churches that are mainly volunteers, probably have around 100 people or so, might have one, maybe two full-time ministers on staff. Everything else is volunteer-driven. And by positioning itself that way, it does get a chance to speak to a very, very large demographic of churches in the New England area.
Sure.
I think the nationwide church size is still, 60s, 70s?
I think that's the average, yeah.
Right. I think just nationwide it's like 60s, 70s, right? So like on one hand, this is a pretty consistent number all the way around the United States. However, in New England, I would say it gets even more kind of real, right? Like it's a higher reality that most churches in this area are probably under 100 people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think you have a lot of churches that are in their like 30s, 40s, and 50s. Mm-hmm. Sometimes younger, sometimes older, right? So it's not even like, it's an older church that's super traditional and no one wants to go there and that's why they're small. Sometimes it's just, the town that used to be, a farming town is now on the edge of a suburb. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the extension of a city. And so a lot of people are leaving that farming town to go to churches. And so you end up with, the small, you'll have this kind of break between the small local church that serves its literally direct community, almost like a parish mentality. Mm-hmm. And then the attractional churches that kind of pull from a large segment.
Yep.
You have almost more like a parish, I think, right?
Yeah. Yours we're is kind of in the Chelmster community, even though we're on the border of two other towns.
Right.
And nobody really knows we're Chelmster, but we serve pretty much Chelmster. I mean, we have some people that are from other towns.
Right, but it's like in general, your focus is this particular area.
Where our focus is usually, if we're doing outreach or anything, our focus is usually Chelmster.
Right.
Some of our, like our trunk or treat that we did this Halloween, that draws in some people from Lowell and from Billerica who are right next to us as well. So, but mostly any kind of outreach, we're going to focus on Chelmsford because we're right here.
Yeah, whereas opposed to like maybe if you were part of one of the larger churches in this area, like there's a large church in Lexington.
Yeah.
It has, kind of multiple campuses. It has multiple locations. It's got a lot going on. And it can say it serves Lexington, but we all know that it really doesn't, right? I mean, not that it doesn't serve Lexington. I don't get me wrong, but like, it has a much larger draw than just that one town. And so, you know, it's got a lot more focus. It's also a bigger church. It's got a lot more staff. So this conference focuses on those smaller churches, on trying to equip them to do the work and ministry of the gospel well in their local communities and within their context. But I'm always curious on, we were just talking as we were coming in here, because I'm always curious as to what are the best things presented at these kind of conferences? Because when you go to a conference, do you go to learn something specific and have something practical, or do you go to get inspired and quote-unquote refilled or reignited in your passion? Or is it both?
My preference would go to get something practical. So I just went to a conference out in Colorado. And the reason I went is because the president of our denomination, Fred, Travis knows Fred too.
Yep.
And he called me and said, hey, you want to go to this conference? It was called the Future of the Church Summit. They call it a summit. And Group Publishing was putting it on, and at their headquarters. And I was like, yeah, sounds good. And then, and when he told me where it was in Loveland, Colorado. And that's where my sister-in-law and her and my brother-in-law and their two kids live. So I'm like, perfect. I'll go see them. You know, mm-hmm. I'll stay with them. So, and what I liked about this conference is it was you sat at round tables, not in a big conference room. Mm-hmm. You sat at round tables with other people, and they had panels for each session.
Mm-hmm.
And these panels would just do discussions, and then they would ask, like, what do you guys think? Discuss this at your table, take some time, and then we want to hear from you guys. And I thought that was a really great way to do it, because then you can hear from other people.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear from a lot of different voices, and it was very practically focused. And so I've been to conferences where it's more of a, and Travis and I were talking about this earlier, and I'll use his kind of terminology, bigger vision focused. And it's more, like he was saying, it's more geared towards recharging you and things like that. The problem I have with those kind of conferences is sometimes you get these big known, well-known speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes these speakers, and not all of them, not to put them all in one category, sometimes they will talk about what worked at their church, and you should, and almost encouraging you to do this and do this and do this, and this will work for you. And they want to put all churches in one box.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, a lot of the stuff they talk about is very contextualized. And what I mean by that is, not everything that they do will work in my situation. It's like those, you know, the Christian telemarketer calls you get.
Yes.
And I can always tell where they're from, because they're from the South, because I can hear their accent right away.
Yes.
And they'll call you and they'll say, well, we got this new program, and it is guaranteed to get you 500 more people in your church and things. And I'm just like, do you realize who you're calling New England? Like, that doesn't work here.
If you could add 500 people into your church, you'd be one of the largest churches in the greater Boston area. Yeah. Like, as far as like metro, you know, extended metro area.
But that's, I use that because that's the problem. Like, they find a program that worked for them, or maybe a few churches like that is basically cloned. They're just cloning themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually happens kind of in the South,
mm-hmm.
or maybe Midwest, where people are still, a lot of people still go to church on a regular basis. And they try to sell you that, or try to push, or try to encourage you to do that in a New England context. And it's like, you don't know this area. Like, that's,
yeah.
Those approaches, and not all of them, but some of those approaches will not work here.
Yep.
And so that's what bothers me sometimes about conferences that you go to. I'm just like, I don't really want to go. And I remember I saw a conference. It was like a men's conference. And it was like, they were going to have like bull riding and motocross and like maybe cage fighting.
When I think of Greater Boston, I think of bull riding.
I know.
Like, when I think, you know what's going to get the people in here? A bull.
Yeah.
Listen, we can't get two sandwiches at a Popeyes. Do you really think we're going to be able to get a bull? This is New England, man. We can't even get Popeyes to give us two sandwiches in the same order. Do you really think we're going to be able to get the old bull riding ring up?
Yeah.
I
so that's what I have. I have. So that's my take on conferences, and that's why I don't really go to a lot of them.
Yeah.
Because it's like, eh.
I have a so I had the discussion when I was asked to be part of this particular conference, because I'm presenting at it, and I remember my first thought, you know, I was asked to, like, hey, here's the topic kind of for the conference. Here's kind of the general themes that you can play with. what are some sessions that you would like to hit? Like, right, if you had the opportunity to do two or three sessions, like what is the session you'd like to hit? And of course, you know, there's that one part of me that kind of as a pastor, coach kind of person wants to be very inspirational, right? Like, let me give you a 45-minute session that's nothing but like deep, deep quotes and phrases that you are just going to tweet nonstop, and it's going to be like the best, you know, tweet session ever of your life, because everything's just going to be dripping with knowledge and deep vision, and you're going to just walk out going, yes. And then I was like, I hit the reality of when the other problem I think that you run into with these conferences is that besides the fact that depending on who's hosting them, they may or may not actually contextualize to your local area and ministry at all, is they serve, in this case, a very wide range of churches and denominations and expressions of faith, right? And so, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I could do one on like, you know, how to create a worship team leader pipeline, mm-hmm. right? The idea being that, you know, how do you in your church start developing and training worship leaders, you know, out of younger and future generations, so that way someone is always learning and there's always someone to do the job. You know, which works really, really well when you have an environment, a church that's open to that, right? And then you can sit there and be like, okay, here's how we're going to do it. But if you don't, like if you have a church that's very, or if you're in a denomination, because sometimes this isn't actually in the church's hands, right? Sometimes this is actually like part of the denomination or the fellowship or network that they're with, that they're kind of obligated to train and teach in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And they can't just simply put someone in. Like I was in denomination, you know, where we would talk about how to raise up. We'd spend a lot of conferences talking about how to multiply the church, how to raise up leaders, mm-hmm. and how to bring lay people into ministry.
Yep.
Right? And then this denomination hit a snag because as part of our own constitution and bylaws, or basically the rules that we all agreed to live by way back in the day, we made it very clear that the denomination has to confer licensing and ordination, not a local body. Okay. Right, so the local church can't say, hey, we recognize the pastoral gift in this person, lay our hands on that person, and install them as a local pastor.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Anything like that would have to go up through the denomination. They would have to meet with our vocations committee. Mm-hmm. They would have to meet with our ordination committee. And of course, as part of that, we also have certain educational requirements that we prefer to see then, in which case now, if they have done, you know, if they've done no kind of, you know, ministry or biblical seminary or training, now it's like, well, if you want to pursue this, you know, here's the next 2 years that need to be spent pursuing this particular certificate or degree process. Sure. And so what should just be, hey, this person has a shepherd's heart and a call from God, and we want to get behind this local body to lay our hands and at least, you know, call them like pastor with a small p, so to speak, right? Like, yeah. It doesn't even have to be like the pastor. But we want to recognize it. We would have to come up with really creative ways of saying that so that way we didn't sound like we were basically, for lack of a better word, giving the middle finger to our denominational head,
gotcha.
Right, to that governing body. So, and that's just one of those things where it's like there are a lot of groups that run into those same kind of practices where the desire is here, the need is there, but then there's a lot of different politics or rules and regulations that stand between them and accomplishing it. So my challenge in these kind of conferences is they gather all these different faiths and different expressions. I mean, again, it's all Christian faith, but it's high different expressions and ways of expressing that. And oftentimes you get some very, very different views in the same room. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard in my experience, it's really hard to be practical or to be visionary, mm-hmm. and inspiring.
Yeah.
In when you have like two people who may agree not at all on most things scripturally.
Yeah.
I say this because I know that coming into this weekend, and we'll get to this in just a minute here. I know we're keeping you waiting, dear listeners. There are going to be people who think John MacArthur is correct. Oh. And there are going to be people who think that John just needs to go home, for lack of a better expression. Maybe to an eternal home even. You know, there might be some who might be ready for that. But it's that kind of conference, right? Like, so as a presenter, you know, speaking to that, I was given the option of, do you want to go visionary or practical? And I totally picked practical. Like, I would rather teach you how to do something that requires actually no faith at all.
Yeah.
And we don't have to ever bring a doctrine into this in order to do this well. But yeah, I'm curious, like, you know, do you have any other thoughts or any other things that you would speak to on that? I'm curious if our listeners, maybe our listeners, do you guys prefer practical conferences and sessions and workshops or visionary ones? Do you prefer to leave with your heart burning because you heard something that stimulated your soul? Or do you prefer to leave with the hands-on equipping of, I can now go do X, Y, and Z because I have the way to do it in front of me. The path has been laid out.
So the way my brain works is if you give me a step-by-step guide or show me step-by-step how to do something, I'm more inclined to do that. If you give me a big visionary type of thing, I'll write it down, but I may never look at it again. Even though I type it up like on my iPad and my keyboard, I'm like, oh, this is great. I might quote it. Mm-hmm. I might use it in a message. I might refer to it, but that's probably about it. But if I get practical, this is how you should do it. So like at our denominational meeting, we call our conference, this past year we had Mark McDonald, who wrote the book Be Known for Something.
Yep.
And he came and presented not in a visionary way. He came practical. This is what we should be doing. This is what we should be, because he's coming from a marketing mm-hmm. background. And, so I'm going to have to text him later and say, hey, I mentioned our podcast today. So just give him props. But so I think it's when he said some of these things, and I even sat down with him like in between sessions, it was like, hey, can you look at our website and give me any? And he gave me some practical things like, here, do this, change this, change this, change this.
Mm-hmm.
So I went home and I did it. I started editing and changing and
yep.
and working on it and things like that. So so I'm more inclined, and I appreciate more if somebody comes up and gives me practical things to do rather than, I'll take the visionary stuff. If you want to mix in that kind of stuff in with the practical.
In with the practical, that's
maybe
fine.
Maybe intro the practical with the kind of visionary stuff and this and that. I get into that. I like that.
Yeah.
But I also like the give me the details. I want to know like how this, and maybe that's why I like to read like biographies and autobiographies. I like to know the details of how this person got to where they were.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. And so
cuz I feel like there's like a part of us stuff. I feel like there's a part of us that always likes, the vision stuff is good. Because it's good to see the picture of what could be.
Yeah,
right. I mean, that's an exciting, encouraging
yeah.
thing. Yeah,
it's definitely
that can giftly, especially if you're maybe someone who's not a high self motivator. Because I feel like a lot of this also comes down to personality, right?
Yep.
Like if you're not a high self motivator, if you're maybe a little bit more on the, glass half empty kind of output, where you're kind of always looking more at the hard reality of life around you, it's good and necessary for someone to say, hey, life could look like this. Faith could look like this. The problem is I know that I've been to so many conferences now, more than I could possibly count, where I feel like it's just speaker after speaker after speaker painting a utopian version of society or life or the church or X, Y, and Z again. You name it, they paint their utopian picture, and then they kind of mic drop, like, mind blown. And then they walk away, and you go like,
follow-up.
That's fantastic, but how do we get there?
Yeah, like, how do we get to that
What
point?
Do we do about it? And on one hand, there's a part of me that goes like, okay, I like it when I'm sometimes left to, kind of play in my own sandbox, right? Like, oh, here's the big picture. I can kind of just create my own path. But then there's some real, you start realizing, there's a lot of tips, practices, best next steps, all that stuff that smart, intelligent, wonderfully gifted people have figured out and written down and passed on, and those are good and useful. So I say that all to kind of again, not to knock conferences in any way. I just am always a little interested to hear how do people experience them? How do you experience them with your, if you're in the workplace? Because I always feel like a little bit they're just, they're great encouraging places. It's nice, but they can sometimes lack in that practicality. So if you come hang with me this Saturday, hopefully you will be practicalized.
Yeah.
You will be gifted with practical things to go and do and ways to improve immediately.
Yeah. So the conference that Travis is teaching at is Simply Worship, and it started by...
Excellent conference, again.
Our friend Andy Needham, and it's definitely... I think he does a good job of mixing visionary
totally.
With practical.
Yep, totally.
And so Andy has done a great job over the years, and if you're in the area and if you're looking... If you have a worship team, or you're looking to...
If you're in the New England area.
If you're in the New England area.
Make sure, again, New York?
New York?
So,
if you're in the area and you want a conference to go to that's going to give you both visionary and practical, go to Simply Worship. It's great.
I would love to see someone come from New York and they're like, no. there's a big bouncer at the door who just wears a shirt that says New York's out.
York is out.
Whatever.
So let's talk about...
We have a few minutes left here. And,
let's
and
talk
so
about John McCartney.
We'll talk about it because I feel like it has to be because he responded. And I will preface this with this. When we did our last podcast,
yes,
I threw it up on the Facebook.
I feel like it's a good terminology when you talk about this because threw it up.
I did throw this one up a little bit. It just like
kind of makes you sick.
Yeah, it was a little nauseating. But I put it. I posted it up there. And then I think a couple days later, maybe later that night, I can't remember what. No, it was the same day. I had made the joke of I was going to go as Beth Moore for Halloween.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to go. And I'm going to go, as I termed it originally, piss off the white evangelical patriarchy. And that actually led to quite the controversy on my page. And I think it was partially because I had a brother call me out because he's like, Travis, you should not be speaking such inflammatory things. I, of course, initially thought when I first read it that he's talking about the fact that I would dress as Beth Moore.
Yes.
And the evangelical patriarchy that I was undermining. And I thought perhaps he was worried that I was becoming a cross-dresser. Oh. I could see that being... He's a little more from a conservative area, and he knows that I'm in, quote-unquote, liberal, godless New England.
Yeah.
And so, I think maybe he was worried that I was actually into some cross-dressing Beth Moore thing. Yep. And I was like, no, good. We're good. I don't do this regularly, just for Halloween. We'll be okay. And so I thought it was that. Wasn't that. I thought then it was the evangelical white patriarchy remark. No, it wasn't that at all. It was the fact that I used the phrase piss off. But it took us quite a long discussion to get to that point. And in the meantime, of course, everybody, because it's social media, everybody's jumping in. They're jumping at him. They're jumping at anybody else that could be possibly, thrown into this conversation. But it was quite the to-do. And as part of the commentary, of course, the guy's like, hey, well, MacArthur really hasn't clarified what he meant. So maybe to some degree we should give him the benefit of the doubt. Because it's an off-the-cuff remark done here, there, and everywhere. Yeah. And, it was one of those kind of like, he's just kind of like trying to like, hey, let's everybody take a deep breath. So MacArthur clarified. And I feel like I'm slightly vindicated in my both snarkiness and in the phrase piss off at this point. Because totally I did vindicated. Go back and update my Facebook post, totally and I just vindicated. Simply said, scare. I was like, I will take on from the advice of my eldest daughter, who was like, well, Dad, it's Halloween, so why don't you just say you're out to go scare the patriarchy? She's like, and then it sounds Halloween-y and costumey, and I'm like, okay, fair enough. And so I did update it. But now, given his clarification, I feel like piss off is totally off in order.
I agree with that.
If you haven't seen it, we'll go ahead and hit on it. Like I said, I almost don't want to give it too much airtime simply because... It's a level of ridiculousness that I'm not quite sure I even feel like promoting. But I also feel like this is part of what we do here is we kind of...
let's push the envelope.
Yeah, we kind of sit around and be like, hey, this is stuff that we see, and here's stuff that's not right, and we'll call it out, and here's stuff that we highly disagree with, and we'll say it. We'll try to be as gracious and snarky as possible. It's a fine line that we walk in those two things.
Yes, it is.
MacArthur started off by letting us know that women... unequivocally are not in any way biblically able, capable of preaching or serving in a church. In fact, he actually pulled out the 1 Corinthians passage and he said, it is beyond a shadow of the doubt clear. It should not be that hard to understand that women are not to speak in the church. And he, of course, then extended that to, as he termed it, this is his words, all women are supposed to be in submission to all men in all churches. And he followed that one up by saying, you should not say a word, period, in the church. Now, I'm not positive. I'm assuming he doesn't just mean like kind of like general conversation over the donuts that are happening in the fellowship hall. I'm assuming he means on some kind of official authority level, unless MacArthur is like advocating for some kind of weird room where, like, all the women hang out in the back over here, completely silent. All the men get to sit up front. I don't know. It was kind of this was kind of cherry-picked a little bit, too. So I didn't read his full transcript. These were just kind of the highlights that were posted out of it. But they were part of his message on Sunday in his church as he sought to, as he put it, clarify the thing going around the internet that he's kind of at the center at.
Yes.
That was his way of putting it.
But he said he was kind of involved in.
Kind of involved in. That's right.
At the center of it.
And then, of course, he took it from there to the fact that all churches that have any women in any kind of ministry are rebellious churches. Women of course, are also rebellious.
Of course.
He outlined that women's sensibilities are mercy, compassion, and kindness, which is what leads them to vulnerability, which is why they, like Eve, are often deceived, especially when they leave their man's covering, as Eve left Adam. And then, of course, he had to defend Adam, because we can't just leave Adam out to dry. We have to defend Adam. He's like, so Adam basically knowingly sinned in order to protect Eve. Like, it wouldn't have been good for Eve to go and deal with this all by herself. So Adam would only sin in order to protect her. It was kind of like a self-sacrifice kind of thing. So almost good on Adam for sinning. I that was kind of the message I took away. It was almost like, good on Adam. I'm glad he... Way to go, champ. Way to go. You didn't just stay holy and upright. You went ahead and fell for your woman. It was weird, man. It's a weird passage. It's a weird statement. There's a lot of odd that I'm not quite sure. It's going to take me a while. Like, I just simply read it this morning. It's going to take me a while to kind of process and delve into it more. But, Ryan, your thoughts.
So, I used to teach Genesis at Christian school, where actually Travis's wife works at now. She teaches there now. And when I taught this, the fall story, I would throw out the question to my class, mix of girls and boys, you know, who's at fault here? Yeah. And all the guys would immediately say, oh, it's Eve's fault. It's a woman's fault. And I said, oh, contraire, my friends. Let's look at this story carefully. And I would read the specific part where it says, and Eve, after taking the bite, turned to her husband who was with her.
Yeah, right there.
I think the traditional perception is Eve is there by herself listening to the serpent, and then Adam happens to walk up.
Or in some classic ones, like, again, Flannel Graph Sunday, you walk Eve over to Adam, where he's usually lounging happily under a tree or something like that, as men are supposed to do, just nothing.
Apparently
they're supposed to wait around for wives to throw, you know, fling fruit at them. But
So I said, look, Adam was there.
Yeah.
So Adam, in my opinion, and I think in my interpretation, and I think it's backed up by other passages of Scripture, that Adam was more at fault than Eve, because Adam sat there and listened to the serpent talk his wife into disobeying God,
and apparently didn't counter it.
No, and Adam was the first to hear from the word of God from God's mouth and said, do not eat of that tree. And he sat there and listened. And then I think that interpretation is backed up by Scripture, because what is Jesus called? He's called the second Adam for a reason. And Paul even says in his letters that the sin entered the world through the one man, not the woman.
Not through the woman. In fact, actually, like, Paul would counter that we're saved through women, but that's a whole different discussion.
Yes.
But, I mean, I agree with you, right? Like, so again, if we look at Christ as the second Adam, which is what he's referred to as.
Several times,
yeah. You know, there's this idea that Christ, as he himself says, I only do what the Father has told me, right? So you get this understanding that Jesus is working directly in connection with the Father. He's hearing the word of God. He's seeing, you know, the face of God in a way that Adam had before the fall, right? Because again, if we get into Genesis, Adam and, you know, would walk with God in the cool of the night. They would be all together, right? So there was this understanding of deep relationship, something that at the fall breaks, and we see the rest of the story of God's people, if we go through the end of Genesis into Exodus, into, you know, Leviticus and Numbers, you know, we actually get this point where God goes from being someone you can walk with in a garden and being very close in personal relationship to say, for example, the Israelites in the Exodus. God is a terrifying figure who, even when he speaks to them shrouded through a cloud, they lose it, and they beg Moses to never let it happen again,
because they're
terrified. And you know, Moses desires to see God, and God makes it very clear that, you know, you could not see my face and live, right? So in other words, there is a significant shift that happens in the fall. And yet with Jesus, we see this restoration, this redemption, where Jesus is God, and he sees and he speaks to God, and he is relaying, unlike Adam, relaying to people around, this is how we should live. This is what the kingdom of heaven looks like. This is what you do in and inside of it. And it's not, don't do that, God's going to get angry. It's full of the grace and love to a deceived world, right? So in other words, he names the deceit in the world around him. He names the work of the enemy in the people around him. He knows their hearts several times through the Gospels. He knows their hearts. And yet, it's not a judgment that he brings, but it's these words of grace. It's these words of invitation to forgiveness, this invitation to repent and become part of the kingdom of God. So if you take the story in that kind of a light, right, it's not just one story here, but you have to complete its journey through Christ. You know, it's actually a really interesting thing. Yeah. So,
and here's another, it's like, you know, Paul did say that women should stay silent, but he didn't say it in all his letters. He said it in particular letters, but not all of them. And so, and then also, here's the other thing. So you, that gives me the indication that maybe the women in those contexts were causing some problems. And so Paul was like, hey, let's, ladies, you're causing some issues, so let's stay silent. But in other contexts, like he his good friend was Priscilla.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Jesus, the woman at the well. What did she was like the first evangelist of her town.
Well, let's also be frank, right? There's that. I mean, but it's like also, you know, if you look in the early ministry of Jesus, who funds it?
The women.
The women. And specifically, it's the wife of one of the men who works for Herod.
Yeah.
Right? So Herod, who sought to kill the baby Jesus, so to speak.
Yeah.
Actually, in this case, literally not even so to speak. Baby Jesus is so to speak. But the Herod who goes out trying to literally attack this threat of an infant because of the of prophecies and things that he's, you know, hearing, he employs a man who marries a woman who becomes a believer and follower of Christ who goes, oh, yeah, we'll just fund that.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, you know, there's this huge, yeah, and so I don't know. I disagree with MacArthur when he says that women, I think in his mind, I think he uses preach in a very, very specific way. I think he uses pastoral in a very specific way. And I'm not positive that, I'm not positive at all that we could get to this place where this is exactly how Jesus himself would have interpreted or said it.
No.
I think that there are women preaching all the time in his ministry. I think that there, I've got a photographer flying around behind me trying to take pictures. This is weird. But anyway, it's just one of those things. Here's, I think, what it actually leads us to. This is a better question because I think we all can agree, you and I, probably most of our listeners, that we probably just don't agree with MacArthur. He sounds like an 80-year-old, old, white, grumpy guy who just, you know, shakes his fist at the changing world and goes, you know, you young whippersnappers, get off my sacred lawn.
Get off my lawn.
However, it does lead me to this question of, and we can pre-plan this one a little bit for next week.
Whoa.
I know.
Whoa.
Let's do something. Hey, let's shake it up.
Whoa.
We're going to go long today.
We're going
7 minutes over right now, and we're going to shake it up by pre-planning.
This is amazing.
It is an amazing day. We should discuss biblical literacy.
Oh.
And whether or not we read the Bible as MacArthur does, this is exactly what it says, what's hard to understand.
Yep.
Or do we read it in a more open kind of term? In other words, how literal do we take it?
Yeah.
How contextual do we take it?
Yeah.
I feel like this is something that I always am fascinated with. You're excellent at this kind of stuff.
Definitely.
And so you and I share even, you know, for our listeners, Ryan and I, you know, we're both pastors. We both preach regularly. And we spend a lot of times, you know, there'll be times where we just kind of bounce ideas off of each other and, hey, you know, read through this. You know, we've even co-preached together. So, you know, I would say we probably have some different styles. We probably have different areas where we lean a little bit more into. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be a fun thing to discuss.
Absolutely.
And maybe we'll get someone else who reads another way in there too.
Yeah.
But basically, that's always a fun one because I feel like this is actually what's at the core of these kind of discussions. How do we read and interpret the Bible? Do we take it literally word for word, exactly as it says, exactly in the moment? Or are there other ways to understand, interpret, and apply it? Because I feel like that's at the core of this.
Yeah, and I think with we can kind of wrap this up, but with MacArthur's thoughts and views, it's like maybe you have those strong views about certain things, but don't make these kind of issues, which I see as secondary, don't make them primary,
right?
Which he has.
Yep.
And he has been staunch about it and just driving it into his people that he is supposed to shepherd. And I'm just like, you in such a oversharing world that we live in with social media and the internet, I mean, it's not only your church that's watching, it's everybody else that's watching because he's pretty high profile. So therefore, he's going to be out there more. And you have to think about, you're not just preaching to the audience that's there physically present in your church. You're preaching to a very large audience.
And he's high profile, not just in the church, but also kind of in the business leader world, because he wrote a lot of books that were kind of just business principle, you know, leadership principle model stuff. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, he's got some high cachet all around. So, yeah, let's talk about that. I think that'd be an interesting one. We'll do some thinking. If you have some thoughts, send them our way. For sure, if you're in the area, come hang out with us on Saturday at the Simply Worship Conference. Come hang with us at one of our churches on Sunday, or go hang out at your church on Sunday. For goodness sake, don't forget to send us some Popeyes.
Yes, please.
All right, peace out, people.
See ya.